Thought Press Network.
A big thanks to all our sponsors. Comic Bento.
Comic Bento.
Comic Bento.
Comic Bento.
Comic Bento.
Comic Bento is a subscription service that brings a box of comics to your door every month. Check out our website, thetalkinggeekpod.com. Click the link, subscribe, and wait for your comics to hit the mailbox.
C-R-I-T.
Die!
Welcome, everybody. This is Crit or Die.
Kick, punch, it's all in the mind.
If you want to test me, I'm sure you'll find that Rosa teacher will surely
you
beat you.
Yes.
Nothing will less you than a lesson from teacher. Anyway.
Now, kick, punch.
All right, yeah. So anyway, guys, this is Crit or Die, Bears Love Gaming. That was, usually we just scream air horns, but this time we just needed to sing.
Yeah, we just started rap with the rap.
Sing rap.
That's how we do.
As always, I have with me Pedro Cortez. And this is Cuban Polar Bear Kenny. Thank you guys again for tuning to another episode of Crit or Die. This time we're going to talk about another game review. In fact, this is a fairly new game that came out. It's a very magical game. It's
it literally is
because it's a deck building game for the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. And because we had such a magical card game to play, we happened to bring over a guest with us today who you guys may know. She only has one face. Only one face. And
it's the best face,
and
really.
And it's the best face ever. This is Q the mic. Say hello, Q.
Yeah, that's me. Call me Hermione for the evening.
You got the bush of hair. Kinda.
I do. When I had longer hair,
yeah,
you were
straight up Hermione.
I was even more Hermione than usual.
But yes, Hermione.
Hello.
Q-Mine-y. So, yes, we're actually talking about the Battle for Hogwarts, which is the new deck-building game that came out, if you're listening to this now, roughly 3 weeks ago. 2 to 3 weeks ago.
Very recent.
Yeah, very recent. This is a very new game. It's a deck building game, and it's a co-op. It uses elements of Cerberus engine along with the engine similar to the Legendary tabletop game, if anybody knows about that. But it is interesting because you are pretty much first year students in Hogwarts fighting against the forces of evil.
And there's a lot of evil. There's in fact 7 years worth of evil that you can fight against.
Yes. So yeah. Exciting.
And since Q is a novice, so to speak, to tabletop games, however, is the expert that I know in Wizarding World of Harry Potter, how did you feel about playing this game?
You know, it's fairly old Q, like pre-Talking Geek Q, would have been like, fuck yeah, meh, tabletop, cool gaming. Present Q that now has gotten into the complications of Magic the Gathering, D&D, and more difficult type tabletop gaming, which goes into play with a lot more strategy and trying to figure things out. This was almost too easy to play. It was still fun. It's still fun. And yes, I do know the spells and things like that, but I want to be more aggressive.
You know what I'm really wondering, though? So the way that the game is structured is that like I said, there are 7 years worth of it. Is we've done two. There are seven sections that you can get to. Just like Harry Potter, you know, the 7 years of them being in school,
right.
And shit. It seems like the rules change up every couple years because I read the rules explanation for year two, and it said, oh, it's the same as year one. So I'm like, oh, so that's kind of assuming, oh, things will change as you go on?
Yeah, and there is other parts of that when, like, I think it's either game four or game five, which introduces die. Mm-hmm. And then that die on that side has one of the tokens. Basically, the way that the game is played, you get to choose one of four characters. And so you get to choose between Ron, Hermione, and Harry, as usual. And they've added Neville as the fourth. So this game right now can only be played up to four people, which actually, yes, it should be Neville, if anybody else. And what ends up happening is you start off with 10 cards. You play five. And you have to either gain tokens that let you pay purchase other cards to add to your deck, or you get lightning bolts, which start to strike at the main villain that all three of us are going against when we played. So at the end of your turn, you lose all the tokens you've gained. So you lose all your mana, and you kind of have to start all over again, which I think right now is the most frustrating part of the game, because not all the cards that are on the field do I want to play, and do I want to purchase? And then the ones that I do want to purchase cost so much tokens that it would take me so many turns to get that many tokens, like in better cards.
That seems to be like a purposeful choice to be able to like extend the length of the game. From what I'm seeing, I see like, okay, the ramp of it, because now you're saying they're adding die in like third or fourth year. I'm like, okay, so the idea is like at least the first 2 years, it's like first year, very basic rules. Second year, that, now let's add in a couple more things. And then probably by the third, fourth, fifth, sixth year, they'll be, you know, throwing in more complications. And I think at that point, that's when the game will speed up. I think that once you get to those years, then it'll be like, okay, you already know the basics, so let's already start, you know, burning.
Which I guess is why it's more frustrating for me, because I'm starting off from a novice end, like a beginner on this game, but I already know the mechanics of how to work a deck building game already. Yep. So I kind of already want to jump to like, okay, let's go to the fourth or fifth game so that it's faster paced and a little bit easier. But otherwise, it was a relatively easy game to learn once you got the specifics of it. And I think that any Harry Potter fan will purchase this game. And since the fandom is so huge for Harry Potter, it's a very good introductory game to other tabletop deck building games.
Yes.
Not as complicated. Like, you're not going to go from this game to Magic the Gathering, but you might go from this game to DC and other games that then might slowly, you
build
know,
your way
and,
up to,
build
to
your
some
way
higher
up
level stuff.
To some to higher level stuff. And I think that it being Harry Potter themed, it's going to be able to turn a lot more people than any other, than let's say the DC card gaming that I had already played.
Yeah, it's
with
a great family
recently.
Game. It's like you imagine like all of us that grew up with Harry Potter, like, oh, now we have kids, and now, you know, once our kids get older, we can take this out and then we can play it with us. With leaving it to four players means it's like a mom and dad, a kid, and maybe the brother or sister.
Like the
know?
Typical American family, the boy, the girl.
Typical nuclear family playing Harry Potter. Like,
I did think it was interesting if you say, though, that later on they start adding expansion packs to the game.
I could actually,
Oh, they're going to do that. They're eventually going to do that. But The way that I see the game set up is that from looking at it and the way we were playing, games one and two were introductory, and it pretty much says that, okay, if you're going to continue to be playing, make sure that you can play these two before you go into the third, the fourth. The seventh one uses every card, all the cards that are available, and it the way the game is set up is so that if you're not doing, if you it nudges you to finish the game, because if you don't, the game pretty much beats you up until the game is over. So it has a timer on it. It reminds me a lot as far as the card drawing for DC Heroes, and the actual villain beating the crap out of you reminds me a lot of Legendary. And putting those two together is something fun. It does, if you play this game before you play anything else, it does introduce you, it gives you a great introduction, like as Q was saying, to deck building games. Especially Lord of the Rings, DC Heroes, Legendary, even Sushi Run, even Sushi Go that we played. Yeah. It
Sushi
helps
Go
out.
Was like as basic as you can
as
get.
As basic as you can get. But all in all, I honestly enjoyed it. I could see the appeal for kids to play it. I just want to run all the way through until the game's over to see
how it's going to get complicated.
No, yeah, I definitely want to see that. I also, and just for those of you listening, the way that you either win or lose the game is, you have, depending on the level that you're at, you have a certain level of locations that are on the Hogwarts property. The Death Eaters are taking over them. There are going to be certain cards that are played that will add a Death Eater to that location. Each location takes four Death Eaters. If they take over all the locations in that particular game, you lose. You win by defeating all of the villains. So in game one, for example, we had a choice of three different villains. One of them was Crabbe and Goyle. The other one was Professor Quirrell. And the third one
Draco.
Was Draco. And so when we played game two, we added to those three, and it was Tom Riddle, it was Lucius Malfoy, and it was the Basilisk. So then you end up having to beat six villains while they only have to take over three locations.
So that's where you start getting a lot of the, like, okay, well, now you got this, now put a little more pressure on you to see if you can handle that. And
right.
And it was interesting playing a game finally with the two of you that meant we were on each other's sides, as opposed to the usual Magic plane where I always have to be on with my guards up.
This time
it was like, no, we're all working together, you bastards.
Yeah. Don't attack me, you shithead.
You idiots.
You cannot bolt me.
Which is interesting, because this is a true co-op game. It's a true co-op game, unlike DC Heroes, where it's you can still fuck with people.
Yeah.
But this game, it's like there's no win. It's either we all win or we all lose type of game.
Yeah. And then there, the spells that are in there, you pay a cost for them using your resources, and then each one of those will give you different things. They'll either give you a lightning bolt, which is how you attack with, or it'll let you draw a card, or it'll give you more tokens, or it'll let you remove a Death Eater from a location, or so on and so forth. And then you've got allies, which are all of our favorite characters, like Dumbledore, who's like the shit of all of these like allies.
Gives you everything.
He gives you everything. Well,
which
you
is
want.
What I wanted to ask, since you like Harry Potter so much, and since your knowledge of it was very deep, I wanted to ask how the game relates to the world. Like, does it match well with what we see while we're playing? I know, even though with the limited gameplay we did, like, does it still have the actual character? Like, does it still have a feel like it's Harry Potter?
I think that they failed in the inconsistency of artwork. I think showing me really young Hermione, Ron, Neville, and Harry, and yet I'm looking at, like, Half-Blood Prince Draco on a card, lends itself to a little bit of confusion. I did have an issue with the first main spells being Alohomora, because you wouldn't actually use that spell in a battle.
It's not an offensive spell.
It's not an offensive spell. For those of you who are listening who are not humongous Harry Potter fans, Alohomora opens things that are locked, like a locked door.
Uh-huh, but it does give you money.
But it gives you money, which is why Alohomora works. If it was
stupefy,
it would probably be more of an attack.
Yeah, but not necessarily, because there are other attacking spells which also give you tokens. So I actually, if you were going to use Alohomora, it should have been a draw card.
Okay.
Because that is opening something to give you something else. So right. I actually would have played Alohomora a little bit more to that aspect. And it's also a problem because they didn't make it a draw card, because it's part of your starter 10-card deck. So if they did that, you'd be running out of resources. You would never have an opportunity to gain resources. But then I would have just put it in the regular deck and given me something else that gave me
a different
spell. So for that, I think that was mainly one of my other issues. But given the limitations where you're literally only going to either get an opportunity to gain resources or gain a hit point or remove a villain's attack, they're pretty useful for some of the stuff. Again, it's odd because I'm not used to wiping out all of the hands in my hand all at once. And that's kind of the point of this game. If you draw five, you play all five. I think for the first time since we've only played the first two rounds, but I finally held two cards.
Yeah.
And that was my first strategic move. And it was because it was going to give me four lightnings. And one of them was going to give me a boost if I killed a villain. I knew it was going to be alive still until it got to me. So I decided to keep those two cards. So that was the first time in playing this, only out of two times, that I was able to make a strategic move with the hand that I was dealt. But other than that, I mean, the it does come with a game board for your cards placement. That looks very Marauder's Map-ish. The art on the cards is pretty. I just wish I had an older crew, because the Battle of Hogwarts happened in the end, so they were older.
I don't want babies.
Yeah, I don't want babies. I'm interested to see how the rest of the games go and just how true to the story. I do like the idea. You're at the Battle of Hogwarts. All of these villains are there. All of these are attacking. Not all of these villains are there. Tom Riddle's obviously up. I mean, but you can only have so many villains, you know, and so many known. I'm hoping that in one of those, a villain card is Bellatrix Lestrange.
Well, I would imagine, considering that game four, if we go by the books, wouldn't that be Triwizard Cup, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah.
Yes, in theory, it should
so
be.
So that means, and it does have dice with it with the different color of the houses. So that may come. So if there's other,
like
there's other aspects of,
there.
Yeah, there's other aspects of the game that we just don't know about just yet.
I will say, I disagreed with one thing. Okay, so in each...
Only one?
One main issue. I had one main issue. Because in these four characters, when you get their starter deck, all of them have an ally. That ally for Harry, for example, is obviously Hedwig. And for Hermione, it's also very obviously, it's Crookshanks. It's their pet. It's their ally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ron, however, his ally is Hedwig. Oh, no.
Oh,
it's
not
Hedwig. No.
It should be Scabbers,
it's,
right?
It's Pidgeys. I don't know the name.
Pidgewidgeon.
Pidgewidgeon, isn't that his owl?
It eventually becomes his owl.
But the same thing with Crookshanks. Like, Crookshanks doesn't pop in until much later.
Right, which is why I'm saying there's a little bit of an inconsistency.
Yeah.
And with Neville, he does not have an ally. He actually has an item, which is a mandrake.
And I have an asshole frog.
And an asshole frog.
Well, he would have ended up with an asshole frog. But yeah, the Mandrake actually makes more sense for Neville. So in that aspect, yes. But then they're playing with time in not being consistent with
right.
regards to that. We'll see, because I also have yet to see the entire spell deck that's come out, because we haven't been able to play, again, long enough. I think that we'll be able to get mill through the deck a little bit more if there's only two people playing versus three of us.
These early ones took only like 20-30 minutes to get through.
Oh, yeah.
Very quick.
Quick
so
rounds.
We'll see what the complications will make
it rounds.
Last longer.
But other than that, any Harry Potter game, and I'm fucking down.
You're down for it.
So down.
Well, let me ask you then. We'll do round robin. So Pedro, from 1 to 10 as far as gameplay.
Gameplay, I'd give it.
Well, let's just go all around.
I'm going to give it a 6 now, only because it's so simple. But I think it could grow. It's incomplete until I get to all 7 years, because I definitely see the ramp up for it. It's a really solid start, and it's good, and it's worth playing. But it will definitely have to be one that you get through more of the years than just the first two, because it's still too. It's way too simple.
All right, thank you.
I'm going to give it actually a 7. I'm going to give it a 7 because of the same reason that you're giving it a 6 almost to an extent, and also why I'm not giving it a 10 as a Harry Potter fan.
Yeah.
It is too slow, but given the age generation of Harry Potter fans, where you are going to be starting Harry Potter fans as early as 8 years old, and then you're going into those who grew up with Harry Potter. So for an 8-year-old starting this game, levels 1 and 2 would not be so easy.
Yeah.
It would be definitely a good starter game. I think that it has a lot of potential. It is a game that you can bring out and just play whenever and know that it's quick. It's not like Monopoly or something like that where you're in it for the long haul.
It's not risk.
And it's Harry Potter. So anything that lets me get pretend to be Hermione for 30 minutes, I'm down.
It's super charming.
It's super charming. The box is good. The way that it's packaged is beautiful. And I think that if they were to get expansions, I definitely think that that would be an up. And I'm going to put a temporary 7 because I think that that may change for the better, for the worse, once we get through all the games.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, I'm going to give it a 6. And the only reason why I gave it a 6 is because we haven't finished going through all 7. Because I have a feeling that the first 3 or the first 4 even, you're going to want to keep them together because you don't want to play just game 1 or 2 by itself. So I imagine it's going to allow you to mix them all together and use them that way. And I think that it breaks it up that way so that it's like, okay, are you good enough to play like this? Okay, now you can go to the next one. Now you can go to the next one. So I give it a 6. And like you said, temporarily, I give it a 6. I'm hoping that it goes up higher. I'm hoping that it doesn't fall flat once it reaches. Like, I want to make sure that it's not adding stuff just for the sake of adding stuff. That I hope that it actually contributes to playing the game and not just, oh, it's just a little thing that you do in the middle of it, but it's still essentially the same thing.
I'm actually hoping that by game 4 or 5, you also get added to your main deck. Like that Hermione gets another 5 cards, and so does Harry, and
that's probably going to be one of the ramp-ups.
We'll make sure to look into it, and more than likely we'll probably do a live update at one point.
Yeah,
we'll update whenever we finish.
Yeah. But other than that, that's cool. Something I did want to bring up. We asked earlier on Instagram any questions that people wanted to hear on this recording that we're doing. We got one from Lex Luthor. We call him Lex Luthor.
Oh, Mr. Luthor himself.
Luthor himself. We actually had him on COD before. His name is Will Cabrera. His question is to Q and myself, which team on the kill team box are we going
Holy
to
shit.
Choose, which is either Tau or Space Marines. Now, if you guys remember in the previous episode before, if somebody would have bought us a box of kill team, Bear was going to show Bear Nip. He's probably going to do that while we're doing this now. So,
he's definitely got to show.
Actually putting it on the mic. So you guys.
So if you hear a rubbish, if you hear the rubbing right now.
Oh, I heard it.
Oh, there's the rubbing. So that was full
was
on hair.
Actual hairy nipple on
full
mic.
On hair and nip.
I'm so glad.
Hair and nip all day.
I'm so glad I always give you the same mic cover.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know,
keep it secret and safe.
Yes.
So, you know, we were gracious enough that somebody gave us the box, and in the box has two starter armies. One is Tau and one is Space Marines. Tau, and I actually did some kind of demo, Pedro and myself, when we went over to Will's, game
Silver Dragon Tavern.
Silver Dragon Tavern. We were able to demo it From what I can gather, Tau is more of a I like to keep away and shoot you in the face. More
sniperish.
Sniperish. Not sniperish, but like they like they grow a lot. There's a lot of them that like to nip like to keep tinging at you.
The Zerg style, you're saying?
Not Zerg, not that much. But these guys like to keep their distance and attack.
Right.
As opposed to Space Marines that like to get up in your face and hit you in the head, you know.
More Gears of War style.
Yeah, more Gears of War style. You know, I leave it up to Q, because originally Q chose Space Marines.
No, I'm going
to
still choose Space Marines.
And you're still going to choose Space Marines.
Yeah.
Nothing has changed.
Nothing
has changed. And that means that you will just love Kenny harder than you already love Kenny.
There you go.
Your love will intensify.
However, I did keep, because, you know, I research when I nerd out on stuff. I researched on Space Marines. There is a group, you know, actually there is the actual bikers. I can't remember the names of it. And I know Will is probably yelling at me right now when he's hearing this, that pretty much it's a vehicle, and that when it gets up to you, it there's no, like, save. Usually you throw dice to save. No, it's an automatic hit. I mean, you automatically or start murking people. So those are fun. But Kill Team looks like it's a lot of fun. It's just that now we have to sit down and actually build it.
Yeah, hard part is the building and the painting. Like, playing it is always easy. Fucking building everything is a pain in the dick.
We'll get there. We'll get there, guys.
We'll get there.
It'll happen.
I also went over there to demo it again because I have to. While I was going to pick up yet another box of Kaladesh, because if we didn't already do two different unboxings already at the Shire, we decided to do a third one.
Number three.
You know.
And the reason why is because we have decided that we're going to go ahead, three of us as a collective, create a deck based off of the mechanics from this actual block. We talked about it. We discussed it a little bit earlier.
We talked about our dreams.
The box hadn't been released yet. But now that they have, and we've opened up three, and many, many, many extra booster packs after that. This has been a rough Magic week. Yes, you guys didn't actually get to speak about each individual mechanic in theory, or what we all chose, because all of us chose a completely different mechanic.
Yeah, okay, so what we had is the three main ones. You have vehicles, which are artifacts that can turn into artifact creatures when you tap another creature to man it. Basically, you have a vehicle, somebody jumps inside and attacks you. You have energy, which is another form of, another resource that you can use
to
charge powers.
It's another form of
powers.
Counter. It's another form of
another
counters
counter,
that
yeah.
they use.
It's like charge counters, but you know you can use it to boost shit up. And then fabricate, which lets you either pump up creatures that you cast, or create little tiny robotic servos. Oh, there's so many of them.
Now, I want you guys to take a moment and think about which one do you think that each of us would have chosen, and I'm just going to tell you that you're all wrong.
Yeah, everybody.
We all went different scenarios. Yep. If you thought that I was going to do vehicles, then your heart's in the right place. But that's not me.
Yeah.
That was not me that did it. It's actually Q, the face, that decided to do vehicles.
I was going
to
fabricate. Nope, I didn't. I actually went with artifact vehicles. I wanted to try something different, and I'm the noob in the Magic. I'm the one that doesn't know the names of cards, unless I've played the deck a whole bunch of times. Like, I know my elf deck very, very well, but I also created the deck because I like elves, so that's kind of like where my Magic started. And now, this is the first time that I've played a deck that has forced me to really strategize, know what mechanic is going to work, what's not going to work, really recognize the cards in my deck that are not helping me achieve what I need to achieve in the right amount of turns. For me, it's like I went from like a baby Magic player, and then this deck made me, okay, now I'm like a toddler, and I'm like running
around. You're an intermediate. Like, this is an intermediate set. This is not a super complicated, but this is definitely not 101. Like, you're definitely
right.
The next level.
So, like just the other day we played, and I didn't realize that I had a card that could have killed a lot of people just eating shit.
Well, not that you could have killed a lot of people. You could have been doing a ton of extra damage.
Could have been doing
time.
More damage.
But the one thing I've noticed seeing that you've done a lot with this deck is you're learning more how to use combat tricks and use instants to be able to protect your own vehicles and to boost yourself up. And that's a really important lesson to figure out.
Yeah, because in my elf deck, it's all pretty much laid out right in front. There's no hidden things, but I've been able to use instants and things like that and wait till somebody declares their blockers, and then I'm finally going, okay, no, I'm going to build to smash, and I'm going to do this, yep. and I'm going to do that. So, no, you can't do any of those things. And, oh, guess what? They all have trample, so I'm still hitting you anyways.
Exactly.
So, that, like I said, like this is definitely upped my gameplay and removed me from my favorite green cards for a little while. And I've actually stuck to playing it. I only play the elf deck now when I'm losing.
When you're just
often.
Like, oh, I need something consistent.
Yeah, no, I need
to something
feel,
I'm familiar with.
I need to not hate myself after
it's,
this
it's
game.
It's the warm blankie that you grab when you're like, oh, it's a little chilly.
Yeah, but definitely, that's been cool. But every time I play against Kenny's energy deck, I get scared.
Well, no. let's be fair. Kenny's energy deck is scary. Like, yeah. That thing ramps up fucking fast.
Well, here's the thing about energy. Energy, they created the energy mechanic to go through, I believe it's, I think it's in all colors. Now I think
all
about
color.
It.
I don't think white has that much.
Yes,
energy
but white does have it.
Like
it's very
like
seldom.
One.
Q is running. By the way, Q's running white and red, which is essential, especially when she's using dwarfs.
Yeah, dwarves are white and red this time.
Dwarves are white and red, so that helps her a lot. Me, I'm actually playing, if you can believe it, blue and green, and blue and green. But in true ramp fashion, aggro fashion, I have no counter spells whatsoever in this deck.
You don't need counter spells with that deck.
This deck is pretty much a ramp. All I'm doing is just putting up by. I'm hoping by turn, because the whole point is to have a certain amount of energy so you can pull off big effects or big creatures and things like that. And one of them is Electrostatic Pummeler, which is small in the beginning until you pump it up with more energy, which helps out. So pretty much, I still keep to the aggro fashion.
Yeah. The pummeler doubles in strength every time you activate its ability, which if you pump it up before you activate its ability, you're looking at lethal damage at like turn four.
Right. And then there's a card, and then all you have to do is, like, it's just simple as just putting instants or spells on it, like Larger Than Life, which in the game makes it +4/+4, so it makes it a 5/5. So you double it once, it's a 10/10, double it a second time, it's a 20/20.
Good game.
And if it's unblockable, then you're pretty much done. And that's what I did with the deck. That's essentially what it is. Either that, and then I have a big old fucking flying Leviathan that just comes out at the end of the game.
The Leviathan is there to
is a mid to late game.
It's a second win mechanic because it's beefy enough to be able to do a lot of damage. And when you have an 8 energy, it will send every creature on the field back to everybody's hands except for itself.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Guess what? Now you have a free path for a 6/6 flyer to come in and
That's always fun, but that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean anything when there's a bunch of fucking flying little thopters and servos.
No.
I'm sorry. Forgive me. Servos,
not thopters. Because thopters would fly. Thopters would. So I've been reading.
So you'll be. But no, I'm sorry. Servos, just like a bunch of fucking gnats that just run around.
Okay, so as you could tell from that, I chose Fabricate. Mostly because when I opened that box, I got there was a mythic rare angel that lets you fabricate for 2, and it gives all of the creatures +1/+1, which is called an anthem effect. So it anthems, and you get 3 creatures out for 5 mana, which, you know, that's pretty fucking solid. And I got 3 of them in my fucking box. So I was like, okay, well, clearly I have to build something around this. And I've actually found that it's pretty effective. Its win ratio isn't so high because it's very much a overwhelm quickly or fucking die fast. I put a couple other things in there to try to give a level of consistency with it. The flying vehicles in there are what helps when I can't get enough.
Just in case.
It's my just in case. It's, okay, servos jump aside of this helicopter and fucking go flying over an attack. But the funny thing is I'm reading a lot of like how they were building the set, and originally the original idea was for it to be 1/1 flying thopters.
Oh, so, dear God, that would have been ridiculous.
Well, that was the problem. When they were doing Magic Origins, and they had thopters. So then they were like, oh, well, let's start playtesting Fabricate with 1/1 flying thopters. Oh, no, this will break everything. Like, no, just make them 1/1 normal flying. Like, don't.
Yeah, if you make them just 1/1s, okay, they're a little more manageable. But it's more of a soldier effect.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
They're just soldiers. Well, except they're little adorable little servos just kind of flipping over.
They're colorless, which is the worst part.
Yeah. they're artifacts. So,
yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of artifact destruction in this set. So,
yes,
I mean, there's a lot of ways around it. I ended up combining it with a card from Oath of the Gatewatch, which amused the fuck out of me. It's a 3 mana instant that gives all of your creatures +1/+0 and makes them indestructible. So that's that's the backup effect of oh god, you're wiping. No,
what's happening right now with my deck is now I originally had the problem where I had too many vehicles, not enough creatures to crew them. Then I switched it up with Pedro's help and kind of added more creatures so that I can man my vehicles more. And the last like 5 or 6 times that we've been playing this game, I've actually been locked out in the sense of maybe having 1 or 2 sky skiffs out, and that's it, and having 5 and 6 creatures out. Like, yeah. I had 4 Speedway Fanatics all come out within the first 2 draws of my hand. Like, jeez, yeah. I was like, okay, great, I have haste for everything, right, but
we gotta rescale.
I have a 2-1 right now.
Like, when it comes to deck building, and that's with everybody, because it doesn't matter how much knowledge or how long you've been playing, there is an amount of luck that comes into it. And all you try to do is build a deck that has the greatest probability of happening. Because when I first made my energy deck, I really had nothing going for it. Like, I had to switch it out a lot. I'm playing 40 cards and 20 land.
That's really low.
But considering I'm playing a tomb with the Aether, technically makes it 24 land.
Well, you got the fix. You have something that will help you fix and gain more.
And it helps. Energy. Like, I haven't really had an issue with it. You know, knock on the wood. That's what I get.
That's how I feel when I see that Tomb of the Aether drop on the first turn. I'm like, ugh.
First turn.
And it's happened to him often.
This
guy happens. It's one green, guys. Yeah.
I mean.
It's designed to do that.
No, but it's designed to be there. Odds of it
every time.
Every time it's in his goddamn hand.
Well, if you have a 60 card deck and if you have four of those in the deck,
it's about a
48-49% probability rating. So that means that's a really good chance.
That's not even close.
Kenny, that's not even math. You didn't even math.
Kenny, you know how to read, but you don't know how to math.
I'm trying to think. Four out of 10.
No, you have a 1 in 15 chance.
Yeah, 1 in 15 chance,
which is nowhere near 49%.
Well, if you draw 7 cards, technically 7 cards. So if you draw 4, then you get 7. Like, there's
it's still not a 40% chance.
Like, doesn't matter how you describe the numbers to me, bro.
You have a solid chance. We'll say
no,
that.
You do.
You have a solid chance.
You just happened to been on the right side of those statistics for the last few times we've been playing.
That's what's so interesting reading about people who win, like, the world championships. When they talk about, like, how they built the decks, it's never necessarily about the power of the cards in there. I mean, yes, you definitely have, because there are things you look at, you're like, okay, that's very clearly going to be strong in tournaments, and you have a lot of decks that end up marrying each other. But the very small things that they trade back and forth, they're all doing number games. They're all just like, okay, what's the percentile of me being able to do this? How many times in the 100 games that we were sampling this deck did this happen? It all ends up being card counting. And which I'm going to take a wild fucking guess at some point with a lot of these world champions, and maybe they can't actively card count it or count cards at casinos, but I'm going to take a wild guess when they can look at a table and look at their hand and be like, okay, I can guess that something like this should be coming up pretty soon.
Oh, no. Right. Anybody that's a mathematician, if considering that it's 60 cards and you know that you have a certain amount coming in. In fact, there's a site when I use to catalog my decks, it's tappedout.net, that gives you the percentage of what an opening hand would be with these cards.
Oh, perfect.
So off the bat already, you go, okay, I want to make it where I know that this is the highest probability I'm going to get for this starting hand, then I'm good as gold with that. I'll keep that all day.
Yeah.
Some people learn that as they go on.
You just learn it by building. I mean, just keep building.
I was here with Q when she first started playing up until now, and it's leaps and bounds, really. And she's still learning, and she feels like she still doesn't know anything, which is great, because that just means she's just going to keep learning.
I learning about that one card in my hand, and I'm so used to, it's my turn, done. Your turn, done. That realizing
you're
that
so,
I can
you're
do
so
things.
Wanting to do, you're have so tricks. Wanting, you have you're so wanting that you to can do stuff that you go, hurry up, let it be my turn.
Right.
I play stuff, and I go.
But I forget that I could, okay, at the end of your turn, I'm going to do X,
this,
Y,
this,
Z.
This and this.
That's the problem that I have in remembering. Yeah. Like, I know it. You guys have told me it. But it's like, when it's useful for me to do that and when it's not, like what happened to me where I have a card that if it becomes tapped, it automatically deals 1 damage to every player, opponent, better yet said, because I don't get damage. So there was like a good 4 rounds that I could have tapped it just to crew a creature, not do anything, but just to tap it to give everybody
just use a triggered effect.
Little things like that. So, but now I won't ever forget that.
Yeah.
Now anytime that card's in my hand, I'm like, aha, I wait. I now wait. So that's pretty much it. But now I have way too many decks.
No, that's fine. I mean,
oh, that's fun. That's fun.
That's
now
fine.
You're like, oh, yes.
But now and then we play Russian roulette, and then that's pretty
oh,
much
that's the best.
Yeah,
where
I
we just
fucking love
Russian
it.
Roulette. What we do is we get all of our decks and we put it in and we give it a number, and then we roll D10 or D12 depending on how many decks there are, and then that's the deck we play. May not be yours. It may be yours.
It's probably not going to be yours.
It's probably not.
Sometimes we could just throw a really crappy. We just make a really crappy deck and put it in there as a
wild
card.
I would fucking love if all of us did that.
We're gonna go. Obviously, we'll go more into it. You never know. We might actually. I might actually take Q to a tournament one of these days.
Ooh man.
Yeah. Get her to
Ooh.
A standard tournament, or not Ooh, even.
Oh man.
Or not even. Let's, if we go, since we may even have a Friday night Magic, who knows? And do a sealed deck tournament.
That I would be more. I would
Sealed
be more
deck tournament
for that.
Would be
then.
Good. Sealed deck tournament Q is pretty much where they go. Here is four packs.
Six packs.
Oh, six packs. Sorry. Yeah. Here's six packs. Here's land. Make a deck out of whatever you have there.
Out of whatever you get there.
I
whatever
did pretty well the last time we did the draft.
Yeah, the draft.
I
you
actually
did.
The booster
managed,
draft was good.
I think you won.
I did.
You won. Yeah.
I did. I managed to like. I think I know what I'm kind of doing. But again, I went and I defaulted to green. And I played mostly green
hey,
cards.
Stick with what
you're, I when, stick to what I know.
When you're in those situations, you do what you're comfortable with. You don't get fucking crazy.
Yeah, right? Like I just did now when I tried to make a Harry Potter deck.
She tried to make a magical beast deck, which was
like
just
it.
Wizards
it's
and Beasts.
It's
Wizards
charming.
And Beasts. And I tried to play a color that I
but,
never play.
But
which
you could play, we could find
blue.
Unicorns. We could find other stuff that we can put in there.
No, I need to add to it. But I really just went with all of the expansions that we went through. And the most recent boxes that we have, and I just picked every blue and white magical kind of beast, like hippogriffs and...
Oh, hippogriffs is the most magical thing I think there is in there.
I was going to play it white-red, but I play red and I play green, and I've been anti-blue since I started playing this goddamn game.
Blue is when you...
You would
oh,
think
man. Blue is the color that teaches you the most about timing in that game because mm-hmm. it's all about being able to manipulate what gets played when.
Well, and I'm playing a lot of,
and
actually in this one, the white and the blue, I have a lot of instants.
Yeah.
So Kenny was like, you should do it with green. And I said, yeah, I know I should in theory because it has better beasts. But I wanted to make a deck that challenged me to play a color I haven't played before and a different style.
Yeah.
Because my style was very... Throw everything out and attack you. Throw everything out and attack you for majority of my decks, if not all of my decks right now. Right now, that Fantastical Beast is more like, okay, wait. I'm going to just take you all out, and then I'm going
to
do things.
And I hope that when you, because I want you to create, because I know you haven't, I don't think you have a kill condition yet on
no,
it.
No, not on that one. Not as
so
a, that is,
so
not
you're
as
you're still working on it,
yeah.
But I would like to see what you would do with that, which would be very interesting if it does involve beasts in some form or fashion.
Well, yeah, all I really did was I just really honestly put beasts and wizards. Any type of wizards that were blue or white, I put them in there because I literally used Harry Potter logic. I said, technically, I'm a wizard, so I should use sorceries and instant spells.
Ooh, yeah, the sorceries are a little bit too slow.
Yeah.
It
depends on the sorcery.
That's
you're going to play two different colors, white would be sorcery, blue would be instant, because sorcery, white sorceries are much stronger.
Oh, yeah, they're usually
the
like,
sorceries.
Yeah, clear the fucking table.
Well,
yeah.
That's kind of what I put in there, because of you guys.
Yeah. Yeah,
I literally
great.
Build
yeah.
my deck
smart.
Around you
that's
guys.
Smart. There you
well,
go.
My elf deck has two cards on its side, in case you ever play your fucking angel deck, which is literally the only non- elf creatures I'll put into my deck so that I can attack flying creatures. Yeah.
Actually, no,
like,
that is
literally
wrong.
What I've done.
That is wrong because you do have a non-elf creature in there.
That's Reach.
You know,
oh,
you,
my Hydra.
Your Hydra. So don't.
No, that's yeah, because if they ever made
no,
an
no,
elf.
No, the way you think about it is the elves worship the Hydra, and then the Hydra comes down, and the elves are like, ah, shit, he's out.
Yeah, pretty much. That's you know what? That's their mascot. So fuck your face.
Okay. Well, with the angel deck, my logic behind it is this is like, oh, this is all like angelic shit. Almost everything in there has the only
almost
non-angelic thing
is your angelic
there.
Wall.
No, the angelic wall. The angelic wall still counts. So does Day of Judgment.
It doesn't call
that's
it.
All
it doesn't
holy?
Call it angel.
A.
It's not an.
No,
it's not
it
an
is
angel
all
wall.
Holy. The only
it's
thing,
just a wall.
The only thing that is legitly like not angelic or holy in that deck are the Ursa's Incubators, and that's because the incubators fucking speed everything up.
Also, guys, for everybody that's tuning in, if you have any other questions, I know Will gave us one. If you guys have any questions, anything you want to ask us, if you want to see Bear Nip, if you want, you know,
I show titty all the time.
Yeah, he shows titty all the time. But if you want to see it, you have to, you know, you have to ask for it upon.
I mean,
request.
In person.
You know, if you have any games that you want us to try to review,
yes.
or if there's a topic. In regards to gaming in general that you would like us to discuss, by all means, let us know. Find us out on The Talking Geek. We're part of the Thought Press Network, thoughtpress.net. We push out all these episodes as many times as we can. We're usually in hibernation. Two weeks at a time.
What happens at a time?
What happens at a time? You know, because when we go in,
and then we gotta get
okay,
all
before
we
all get into that, it'll whisper anything. He's always doing like close up. Wait, hold on. Hold on to the whispers. You can follow me at Cue the Mic everywhere. But I do want to give a big shout out to Will from the Silver Dragons Tavern, and they also have a Kickstarter that's going on right now.
Yep.
So we are always really big on supporting and making sure that all of our fellow geeks have a good support system. So please make sure that you check out Kickstarter and you go and you look up Silver Dragons Tavern and just donate what you can or share. You never know who's rich on your social media feeds and might be able to give anything. They're really cool people, and it's something that our local city needs with regards to us gamers and tabletop gamers and those who like beer and games. So yeah, check that out. That's all I really want to say. Now you can go back to your
room. Now listen to what you said and go over to that Kickstarter.
Yeah, go check out
Give them a little support.
Silver
support
Dragon
before we
Tavern,
go curl up in our caves and go back into hibernation.
But, you know, we might as well call Will over because that is a third bear.
I know. It'll be all warm and stuff. Never have to worry about getting cold.
Guys, it's just all nice and snuggly in the shire right now.
And now that you're ready to go to sleep, we wish you guys a good night.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in to Crit or Die. Bears love gaming.
We love gaming. Night.
All day, every day.